great Hank Crawford, Mr. Saxophone, as people call him, but he's called himself Mr. Blues, and that's the title of this song. It's from his 1973 album, Wildflower. This is Lead Stories. I'm your Trees Lead, and a lot of stuff to talk about today, but from a thinking perspective. We've got to do a little bit of thinking before we do some talking. Poor Puerto Rico just can't catch a break. After devastating hurricanes and the aftermath, the devastating aftermaths, we had an earthquake pass through last night. No deaths reported, no major injuries reported, but the island is wary, anticipating smaller aftershocks. Some places did experience loss of power temporarily, but since the hurricane, that has been going on, so they can't really say this is because of the earthquake. But it does leave people a bit nervous, watching out to see whether there will be larger or more, more widespread tremors, aftershocks, or whether that is all. Don't forget, also in the region, you have tropical storms and depressions forming, and the one closest to Puerto Rico at this point is Tropical Storm Karen, and that still also is part of the mix of people being very, very apprehensive about what's going on in Puerto Rico and what will go on in the following days. So send out a good thought, and let's hope that Puerto Rico isn't damaged, that there is no loss of life, and that this storm will pass over, and just leave Puerto Rico alone. They need a break, so leave them alone for a minute. Well, we have some interesting news developing in other areas, and I have had to do some shuffling around of the topics I intended to talk about today in order to accommodate these late developments. And of course, it has to do with President Trump and Lady Nancy Pelosi. Trump now admits, although he had denied it before, but he now admits to having a phone call with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, and that, in fact, in this call, the topic did arise of an investigation by Ukraine former Vice President Joe Biden and his son, who worked for a firm that had business in Ukraine. But before this conversation even occurred, Trump ordered his aides, his people, to put a freeze on almost $400 million in approved aid to the country. Immediately, that raises a question of why. Does it not seem that there was some kind of thought process in Trump that, which is what he wanted? He wanted the Ukraine to, he wanted the Ukrainian government to freeze, or not, I'm mixing it all up. Let me start again. Trump considers Joe Biden a formidable opponent in upcoming presidential elections. So anything he can do to seriously hamper that happening, he will do. One of the things that he decided he would pursue is to attack Joe Biden through his son. And that came in the form of the roundabout way of getting to Biden is through his son, who works for or has worked for a company based in Ukraine. Now, we don't know whether the son, in one way or the other, has had anything to do with the politics of things, but Donald Trump seems to think so, and he seems to think that there's a very strong likelihood that through an attack on his son, he can get to Biden. So before he held this phone conversation with the president, Volodymyr Zelensky, he ordered a freeze on almost $400 million awaiting to be transferred to Ukraine. And people spotted the connection or possible connection and thought it was odd. Was the president of the United States engaging in a form of a shakedown? Was he threatening to withhold these hundreds of millions of dollars in approved aid unless he got some dirt on Biden and Biden's son? And this would give him serious ammunition in the course of his campaign, since Biden was seen in polls, in recent polls, he has emerged as leading the pack of the opposition. So that, in turn, triggered a number of other things. Just yesterday, as a matter of fact, the president of the Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky, himself signed a piece of legislation about punishing heads of state like himself who engage in a particular kind of crime, such as the one that Donald Trump allegedly has committed. He approved it. So that indicates that he's not running away from any accusation. He, in fact, is taking an affirmative stance, saying, I'm in front of this problem. I'm not like you, Mr. Trump. I am here signing this piece of legislation specifically relating to heads of state like myself who might engage in illegal conduct. There's a special place in hell for such people, and I'm signing the legislation that authorizes legal sanctions against such people who are heads of state indulging in this kind of criminal activity. Now, that had a consequence in the United States. Nancy Pelosi, as you know, the Speaker of the House, who had been holding back any move within the party, the Democratic Party, to move against Trump. They said they had enough evidence to begin to take action against Trump in terms of impeachment. And she said adamantly, No. She's not for it. Now, I don't understand how one person, I recognize that she heads up the party. I get that. But I still don't understand why one person can totally disregard the will of the majority of the party. And they had been trying to get this done for quite a while because they have gathered evidence, not just through the Mueller report, but all kinds of other things have come forward about Donald Trump breaking the law and breaking the constitutional law as to what he can and can't do as president, but did it anyway. So they had been prodding Pelosi to move. Let us file the complaints. Let us get this thing in motion. She said, absolutely not. Because the nation, by herself, this is her determination, the nation cannot suffer the emotional stress of an impeachment process should it go wrong or should it not yield the results. And the party cannot face a public with yet another failure. So she was adamant about it and she said, there will be no impeachment. I am not for impeachment. And then we saw Gerald Nadler, the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, launching formal hearings. Meaning, although Nancy Pelosi has laid down the law and usually everybody accepts it as the law, he says there is enough here in several areas to begin hearings that question the legality of many of the president's actions. And he began an inquiry. So he thought Pelosi would cave. Many people in the party thought Pelosi would cave and see the common sense of it. The common sense being, the loss, the damaging loss of time. I mean, even if it turns out that the president did not do these crimes as might have been alleged, the fact is they're going ahead with a procedure, which is the inquiry, to ascertain the president's innocence or guilt, which is perfectly fine. I don't see anything wrong with it personally. I think it's a very good way to go. However, the Democratic Party under Pelosi is so fragmented, it's so fractured, that the people can't get together. They can't come together, they can't agree on what is to be the strategy against Donald Trump. How do we nail him with all these charges that we have? We have amassed a long list of charges against Donald Trump and the ways in which he broke the constitutional law, that he did a number of things on his own, which were outside the purview of his power and authority. And these things, they, in their estimation, should have been investigated. I happen to agree. There was enough there to at least start an inquiry, an official inquiry, quite a while ago. And when you lose time, this is valuable time, you lose momentum. And then you have the problem of the left hand not agreeing with the right hand. And then you have the leader of the party openly saying she's not for any of this. How do you proceed in an atmosphere like that? So in a way, you have to thank Gerald Nadler for bringing elements together on those points on which they agree and which were serious enough on their own to begin an inquiry. There have been lots of marks against Donald Trump legally that should have been investigated. The Mueller report is one, but it is not the only one. There were so many different complaints and so many matters of law allegedly broken by this president that should have been explored. But that's the situation that you had. You had total fragmentation. And then Nadler, looking ahead, decided, no matter what, we can't waste any more time. We will start with what we have. We will start with what we have. Because even those items are serious enough to lead to impeachment, to articles of impeachment. Now, today, it appears Speaker Pelosi has or is having a dramatic change of heart. And she is now saying, let's proceed. Let's see what we have here and how we can proceed with the charges so far. What brought her to this realization, it seems, is the latest, and it concerns Ukraine. Now, Trump has caught himself with his hand in the till, literally. When he withheld almost $400 million of aid, approved, already approved, he withheld it. And he withheld it until he had this phone call. And the phone call is about his presumed lead opponent in the presidential race. And he, in that phone call, presumably, reportedly, allegedly, is demanding that the president of Ukraine conduct, in other words, what do you call that, surveillance and conduct an inquiry into all things that need to be known about Joe Biden and his operation and his son's operation in the Ukraine. Were his operations above board? Did Ukraine ever have any problems with Joe Biden? What was the nature, if there were problems? What was the nature of those problems? In other words, to collect intelligence. Here's the President of the United States demanding, or extorting is the right word, attempting to extort intelligence on his political opponent. A, making the president now of Ukraine a co-conspirator in his, you know, very, very suspect operations of intelligence gathering, and then holding the nation hostage to the president of that country carrying out this act. This is a big, big, big crime. Big crime. And now that they have that as a smoking gun, Nancy Pelosi is convinced, well, yes, this is serious enough to warrant going through the motions on impeachment. Here's the problem. It means that Nancy Pelosi was weak. When you have people of the caliber of experience and expertise in your own party advising you, we should not waste time. Time now puts us at a disadvantage. We should get on this right away. We should be resolute. When you sit around and you futz around and you futz around and you can't seem to make up your mind, and when you do make up your mind, you're talking this wishy-washy stuff about whether the country emotionally can deal. The country can deal with anything. This is, if impeachment is legal, the country will deal with impeachment. There's no big deal about that. But she was cowardly. And she had no faith in the advice of her own party and the people who have gone through these kinds of things before. They're lawyers, and they should put up a fight. And they should have put up a fight when they decided to put up a fight. But you backed away from that. You made them back away. They lost momentum. They lost advantage, tactical advantage. You know, that's one of the most important things, timing, in law cases. I've covered so many law cases, one strictly on the fact that a party decides, well, they could wait. Well, you wait. But when the attack comes quickly, you're not prepared. You're not prepared. And you lose every time. Because you will be scrambling to put together a case when the other side is giving the impression they have all that they need to do you in. But sitting and waiting, now, I remind you, this is like 2+ years. You waited for 2 years. And you can't make up your mind. And when you did make up your mind, you made the wrong decision. Let's wait and see what happens. It's not a leader. That's a wimp. You should jump to it if your party, and people in your party with some degree of knowledge that you trust and that you respect, estimate that the time was right to strike. And I'm talking now within the vicinity of time, the parcel of time, and the advantage that gave to the party if it chose to move was the Mueller report. And they have so many things related to that report to undergird the report. But no, you're waiting. You're waiting because you know in the minds of every single American, you personally know they can't handle this heavy stuff. Silly, silly woman. Silly woman. So now the task is, and it's a good thing Gerald Nadler started a process irrespective of Nancy Pelosi's cogitation and waiting and, you know, not sure, he started it. A lot of time lost for no reason other than you just can't be brave enough and make up your mind to be the leader that you allegedly are supposed to be. Okay. So now we have possible new life being poured into this effort just recently started by Nadler to prepare articles of impeachment against the President of the United States. Here is a wonderful thing that has happened as well. The president indicts himself. The president is indicting himself. Yes, I did have that phone call, although he first said he didn't. Really, I sort of. But now he's saying, yes, he did have that phone call. Now he's saying, yes, I discussed Joe Biden, but his lawyers are going to have him do what he typically does. He's going to come up with some kind of reason as to why he changed his mind, why he couldn't remember these things before. Well, you know, he's an inveterate liar. So he's used to doing this shamelessly, lying. He's done this many times in international and global settings. So this is nothing new. And frankly, if handled right, I'm not making the case that it should occur. The only thing I could see that they will do is to make him the hero. I know it sounds bizarre, doesn't it? Trump is going to nail his own self to the cross. I was just doing my job as president. It had come to my attention that Joe Biden, former vice president, was doing illegal things. I wanted to accord him, you know, the treatment in deference to his political position as former vice president of the United States and so forth. It had to be handled differently. And so I thought I would reach out to my colleague, another president. Yes, yeah, see, I know he happens to be the president of Ukraine, but I thought I would reach out to him man to man. But it was really in the interest of sparing Joe Biden any major embarrassment in two countries. And then he will go into the whole thing about the risk he took in doing so. He took a political risk because people would misread his intentions, which were true and honorable. And he wanted to prepare himself for any kind of mishap and head it off at the pass and solve it quietly without causing any shame to Joe Biden and his son. He's a family man, Donald Trump is, and he and his sons are in business, and many times he's had to intercede, or people have had to intercede to prevent embarrassing situations. And there was no malice intended here. He was just trying to be a nice guy. He respects Joe Biden. He loves Joe Biden. He would like to invite Joe Biden and his sons to rounds of golf on any Trump property they choose. And in so doing, he has to cultivate the persona of a beleaguered president. He can't do anything right because they're so intent on destroying him. Well, there you go. So, Nancy Pelosi has found her strength, her inner strength. She can now see the logic of moving quickly on something that has been lingering in her lap for 2 years. And she couldn't figure out what to do. And it's not only that she couldn't figure out what to do, she actively prevented those who could figure it out to do what they thought they needed to do. She presided over a fractured party that she could not heal. Side A isn't talking to side B. And yet they have in their hands the awesome responsibility of taking on a president. But her personal orientation is what mattered. Well, I don't know that the people of the United States can tolerate something as emotionally wrenching as this. What, did you take a poll? Did you interview every single person in the United States to find out how they are likely to react to impeachment proceedings against Trump? Or are you just feeling your oats in the sense that people have their domain and they are supreme in their domain? I mean, Mitch McConnell is supreme in his domain. Why can't you? That's the thinking. So we lose time. We lose momentum. We lose the participation of the public. We lose the healing that the party should have come to a long time ago, because everybody could agree that the enemy was Trump. But no, here we are 2+ years later. And she finally has seen logic. She finally is getting the point about what her role is and what she ought to do and how to listen to your party members and how to support them. They're not fighting for personal glory here. They're trying to take down a president. Who they believe is a danger to this country. That's very serious. And you're standing in the way of it. Well, let's see if her conviction holds for at least the end of the week. Let's hope she doesn't change her mind before the end of the week. Well, I wanted to talk also, let me get to my notes here, about a little ad, an advertisement that appeared in a local paper in New York City. And it has ignited quite a fire. the ad was trying to interest people in buying property in Harlem. And immediately, for some reason, this was the ad that stoked the fires of rebellion over gentrification of Harlem. And it is burning pretty hot. It's a small firm, two brothers, and they look white. This is what they say. This is one of their defenses. We're really black. We just happen to look white. And we love Harlem. And we want people to love it as much as we do. We're in the real estate business. We have a firm. We have an office and everything. And advertising is natural. This is how you attract customers. So we were looking forward to marketing our beloved Harlem. And we can't understand why people are so being so nasty about this, accusing us of gentrification of Harlem, when we just try to do business. There are people who want or who would want to move into Harlem. And this is our way of reaching out to such customers, people who are contemplating a move to Harlem. So is this about gentrification or about something else? This is the question they're asking. So I'm asking you, is this about gentrification? Is this about something else? And if so, what is that something else? 888-874-4888. We'll take this little break while I wait your calls. Listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Yatrice Lead. And we're talking about a subject I've touched on very frequently, and that is literally the gentrification, the emptying, and the targeting of communities of color, and to the point where people have no place literally now to go. They've lived in the community for a long time, but the community has been on a downturn, and this is the ideal point for people who are in the business of real estate to step in, but it isn't as simple as that, is it? Patricia from New York, is it as simple as that?
Good afternoon, Yatrice, and good afternoon to the PRN family. I just want to backtrack just for 2 seconds on your first topic, which was Donald Trump. I don't know how many people listened to his presentation at the UN today, but what I thought was really very interesting was, you know, his statement that the Democrats have no idea how to stop him. And, you know, to me, that is such a blazing in your face. I mean, forget smacking me. You know, this is a TKO. And the Democrats, and he's right, the Democrats really have no idea what to do with him. They have no plan. They have no strategy. They have absolutely nothing. But to answer your next question about Harlem, you know, real estate developers, they plan in 20 and 30 year cycles. So what we're seeing today in terms of gentrification didn't just happen yesterday or last year or 5 years ago. It began under Rudy Giuliani when he began, when he started to clear 125th Street of the vendors on 125th Street, and all of a sudden you saw all of these stores that went up across 125th Street. If you look now, for those people who know the old Victoria Theater on 125th Street, that's going to be a yes. new Marriott hotel. They will retain the facade of the Victoria Hotel on the first floor, but the Marriott is going up over it, and then there's going to be moderate income luxury housing built on top of that. So this is about depopulating Harlem to the extent that they can, and only the favored people, the chosen ones, need apply to come in. I mean, this is the oldest story in the book.
So how do you have any sympathy at all for the people who are selling Harlem?
Did you say sympathy? You know, in our history, I mean, you always have to look at history. History is never new. History just repeats itself. And there's always, you know, we always have people in our community who are willing to sell themselves to the highest bidder. Everybody has a price. And once the people in charge figure out what their price is, they get paid. People who don't have a price get killed. And it's as simple as that. I shed no tears because they are contributing to the you know, not only the depopulation but the relocation, or even they are contributing to the increased homelessness that we see here in New York. Because it's not just low-income people who are homeless now, or you see in homeless shelters. It's moderate-income working people who just cannot keep up with these high rents. It's not just poor people. It's not just low-income people. It's people who go to work every day who can't afford the rent.
Well, you get 100 on both points. Can't argue with you today on anything because you're right on target. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
See, we understand it at a different level. This is what folks don't get. That the people who are being displaced get the point, have gotten the point, have lived with the downsides for all these years, have been disadvantaged for all these years. You could talk about, well, we are improving the subway line. Sure, because you know who you're improving it for. You know, we are improving community safety. They have all the points. But the fact is, and they can't deny it, Harlem has been a targeted community. How many programs have I done about the newest invaders, meaning the real estate speculators, and what comes immediately after that? Harlem is a community that is in deep distress. And it has been in deep distress for a long time. And that is the point at which you find all this speculation going on. They see people in deep distress. Their representatives have let many years lapse rather than take care of the essentials to support the people who are living there, to protect their interests. They let that go a long time ago. And so these communities are defenseless. The transactions are not between the community and the government. The transactions are now between the buyers and the sellers. They are the ones who are determining the future, not just of Harlem, but the Harlem's of the United States. That's what's happening. So I don't know how it will, whether it would resolve itself. It doesn't seem so. I kept reading practically every week new listings, new buildings that are becoming available. I just saw a listing for a one-room apartment, a studio apartment in Harlem. The rent is $1,500 a month for a one-room apartment. Now, you tell me which average person in Harlem can afford a one-room apartment for $1,500 a month. That is a statement that has several layers of meaning, all of them bad. Khalil from South Carolina, you're on the air.
Hi, Therese. How are you today?
Okay, how are you?
Good. I'm enjoying this discussion. Well, you're beginning, and then Patricia. And, you know, folks who have not lived in either New York or any large city, when you see it in action, it's really amazing. When you see it in action, and what you're talking about, those two topics actually overlap. Because those of us who have been in New York or still live in New York at a certain time, let's say in the 80s, we saw what Donald Trump would do. He would take over a building and not do repairs on it because people in the middle of the country don't understand what rent control is. They don't know that that apartment has been passed down from your grandmother. You know, that's your home. And the rent stays the same. You do what you have to do to hold on to it. And so Trump would take over a building, not do any maintenance, do nefarious activities, hire people to do bad things to the building so that people would be forced to move out at some point. So he could just do enough repair to turn it into a new building. That's one part of it. But the other part, you know, guess what you were about to drive at is the property taxes. Because once you get a certain amount of people in, and when they have rehab, when the developers have rehabbed the community, people can't afford to pay the property tax. Okay? And then here comes Giuliani. And the only part that you guys didn't talk about was law enforcement. Because once you start to enforce these broken window type laws, I guess that was a phrase that Bretton used, something of that nature. When you start to lock people up, okay, the breadwinners and the family, broken window, right? You tear up the families. Like, okay, so for instance, I remember not too long ago when my job sent me from a nearby city. My friend and I would go every day up to all the boroughs. Okay, the Bronx, you know, Manhattan. Everywhere except Staten Island. And I was shocked because I remember New York in the 80s, and it was just desolate. It was desolate. I said, oh, my God, it's coming. They're coming. You could look like in Hunts Point, those big, beautiful boulevards were empty. And I said, this is not going to last. And then so he lives in Brooklyn. So we went over to Brooklyn every evening. And sure enough, they're tearing up the streets in Brooklyn. And I said to him, I said, do what you have to do so that your grandma can keep her apartment. Because pretty soon, they don't want her here anymore. And I think you know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to say that you're spot on with Pelosi, and I'm glad that you said that and you mentioned it. And that's unfortunate, but we'll see what happens.
But do you see any organized resistance to this? It's been very, very slow in coming. And this is the kind of stuff that requires vigorous resistance.
I'm not seeing a vigorous coalition in the Democratic Party to fight this fight now at such a late date. It just seems the people that were laughed at, the newcomers, you know, they were ready, but, you know, they got pushed to the side. It's really sad. It's really sad because anyone who knew this man, we knew this it was going to end up like this. We knew this. And so, no, the answer is no. And hopefully something will happen. They meet today at 4. There's a special caucus meeting at 4. 4 o'clock. But so the answer is no. Do you?
No. The people years ago, and it coincided with the, you know, the drug crisis. There was some resistance, strong resistance, because the people understood directly they were the targets, but they could not get the support from their legislators. They couldn't get support from the legislators because the legislators were in the hands of the real estate, powerful real estate interests in the city. That's where they got their money to run their campaigns. And right. In any event, they decided to put their energies elsewhere. They wrote these communities off. They didn't even want to deal with them. So this is where we are now. A one-room apartment. The big selling point for this one room is that it has a toilet and a bathroom. And that will cost you $1,500 a month. And you better be grateful.
You better be grateful. That's the other part. If you can get it.
If you can get it.
And you can't even go to Newark. The water is poisoned.
I'm telling you, if we don't see by now how vital it is to be alert and to be active and to resist this craziness that is happening all around us, all these sectors, same thing is happening, there'll be such an incredible attrition. Even we will be stunned at how devastating it is and how complete it is. There are places now that have been totally flipped. Racially, economically, totally flipped. They were nothing like they used to be. Thanks, Khalil, for calling in. Ed from Queens, you have only a couple of minutes. I'm sorry to say, you're the last caller today.
Hey, well, I'll just be brief. Number one, $1,500, unfortunately, that cheap. Number two, I bring it back to all politics is local. I used to live in East New York. And if you know Charles Barron, that is a politician that has my heart and that has my support. He defended that community. The same thing was going to happen in East New York, and he would not allow it. And the people backed him, and he backed the people. And that's what we need. New York is a real estate town. It always has been. Tornado, Titian Fire. Even Trump and his ilk, and you've got to, all politics is local. You've got to get politicians that represent your needs, your desires, and your wants. And a perfect example is Charles Brown, Operation Push and Operation Power. He made sure when they came into East New York, they took care of the people. And that's all I got to say.
All right. Thank you so much. Well, that brings us to the end of our program today. You know, when we talk, you know we've covered these issues, and you yourself, you know you've gone through these issues 100 times already in your head. You know what the answers are because they're so clear. And yet we're stuck with the problem because people who do know the answers and should know the answers refuse to act. They refuse to act as if the situation is in fact as dire as it is, as we know it is. But we still have to keep on trucking. We can't give up, but we must gather as much information as possible to help us make the right choices and decisions.
We'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Liberal, it's not conservative. It's progressive. The truth that empowers. Right here on PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
Next time on Peace Talks Radio, highlights from the Peace Week 2010 online event.
You know, there are so many instances where people are willing to take risks to try to make this a better world.
We have to look at and begin to provide opportunities for interfaith dialogue.
In the past, peace may have been the domain of the altruistic, but in this age, it's in everyone's self-interest.
That's next time on Peace Talks Radio.
Do you want to know the latest news or upcoming events? Follow us at Twitter at PRN_radio or click the Twitter icon on our homepage. You can also friend us on Facebook. Just search Progressive Radio Network. Always new and up to date. The Progressive Radio Network, your home for thoughtful and informative information.
Economic, political, and military decisions in Washington, D.C. impact the entire United States and world. And yet corporate media offers few facts, history, or people's voices about these important issues impacting our lives. I'm Esther Ivarim, inviting you to check out On the Ground, Voices of Resistance from the Nation's Capital on the Progressive Radio Network, Mondays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. We cover social justice activists in the streets and in the suites. We cover those who come to D.C. from across the nation or from across the world to speak truth to power. Whether it's the war machine, the movement for black lives, healthcare, education, the economy, voting, corporate power, immigration, criminal justice, or environmental justice. Check out On the Ground, Voices of Resistance from the Nation's Capital, Monday, 6 p.m., here on the Progressive Radio Network.